Good evening. I'm Erin McGrory with the KUAC Newsminer Update. The biggest ever recorded earthquake on the North Slope occurred yesterday morning about 50 miles southwest of Kaktovik. The Alaska Energy Desk's Elizabeth Harbaugh reports.
State seismologist Michael West at the Alaska Earthquake Center says Sunday's 6.4 quake is one for the record books.
This is the biggest earthquake within a few hundred miles, at least, of that area that we have records for.
In the hours after the main quake, there were a series of substantial aftershocks in the region, including a magnitude 6 at 1:15 p.m. That's the second largest earthquake ever recorded north of the Brooks Range. West says earthquakes are common in the region, but what was surprising about this event was its size.
This earthquake will definitely cause people to reevaluate the seismic potential of the Eastern Brooks Range and Anwar areas.
A North Slope Borough spokesperson said Sunday they were not yet aware of any injuries or damage, but the event was felt across the Arctic. Amanda Kolek lives in Kaktovik, the community nearest the earthquake.
I was actually sleeping and got woken up because my bed started swaying and I can hear the pilings on my house swaying, shaking as well.
Kolek says she got up and checked on her three daughters, who all slept through the shaking. But it wasn't long before people across the North Slope were taking to social media to talk about it.
Everybody was posting on Facebook, and there's people, family members in different places that were checking to make sure we were okay. And we told them we were all okay.
The quake was also felt in the state's biggest oil fields. The Alaska Earthquake Center reports the epicenter was 85 miles southeast of Prudhoe Bay. But North Slope oil operators aren't reporting any problems. Kate Dugan, a spokesperson for Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, says the Trans-Alaska Pipeline is operating normally. Dugan says Alyeska also has sent up helicopters to survey for any impacts along the northern part of the pipeline.
At the same time, we're dispatching crews out to our facilities, to the pipeline itself, to work pads, to check for any settlement or movement.
Reached on Sunday, spokespeople for ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and BP were also reporting no damages as a result of the quake. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
The death of a pack rafter in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park earlier this month has raised awareness about proper preparation for the increasingly popular sport of floating backcountry rivers in tiny ultralight inflatable boats. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Aiden Don's body was located by searchers along the glacially fed Nizina River August 2nd. The 22-year-old Austrian's body was 7 miles downstream from where he and a paddling partner began a planned one-day float. The trip starts with a stretch of Class 2 rapids, and Wrangell-St. Elias National Park spokeswoman Margie Steigerwald says Don was lacking key gear for the Nizina's rough, icy waters.
He was not wearing a personal flotation device or a dry suit.
Steigerwald also points to a lack of training and experience.
Not recommended to go on unguided trips if you're a novice to pack rafting.
Don and his paddling partner were flown into the start point of their Nizina River float, but the two pack rafters became separated shortly after setting out on the water. The partner did not know what happened to Don until finding his empty raft. Pack raft safety educator Monica Morin emphasizes the importance of keeping close track of fellow paddlers.
Never, ever would I allow them to get out of sight.
Morin is lead ranger for the Bureau of Land Management for the Lower Deschutes River in Oregon. The former Denali National Park backcountry ranger says she began doing pack raft specific safety education after moving to Alaska in 2013.
Sort of a side project because a lot of my friends were telling me stories of near misses and almost accidents that they had on the river, and just felt that there was a need to kind of help catch the pack raft community up to speed with the boating community, the river community.
Morin says in the past, boaters have typically focused on road-accessible rivers, but pack rafts have enabled getting to more remote waters where any trouble can have greater consequences.
You're in a completely different realm of risk.
Morin also points to pack rafters' focus on pairing gear weight to a minimum, which can lead to leaving behind safety essentials like a PFD, dry suit, and helmet. Morin says pack raft trips remote locations can also result in overcommitment to floating out.
Once you're in pack raft mode, to get out and hike can be really hard mentally.
Morin teaches pack rafters to have bailout options in case their float doesn't go as planned. She says that means carrying a map, compass, and other emergency gear inside your dry suit, noting rafts can float or blow away. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
For more on tonight's stories and others, go to newsminer.com or KUAC.org. I'm Erin McGroarty.